Hey, my name is Chelsea Fagan, and I'm the founder and CEO of The Financial Diet, a totally independently owned and operated company of women who love to talk about money. Welcome to The Financial Confessions, a weekly show where we talk to people about their personal finances, their professional industry, and how money shapes their lives. You can listen to or watch new episodes of The Financial Confessions every week on YouTube or your preferred streaming platform. You can also support TFD and get exclusive access to our entire catalog of ad-free bonus videos, workshops, Discord community, our book club, and more by joining our members-only community on Patreon or YouTube. Our 2024 goal is to be primarily supported by our incredible community, and joining our membership program is the best way to do that. Enjoy the episode! Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of The Financial Confessions. Today, we are here to talk about probably one of the most serious financial issues, but also one of the most seriously misunderstood. The word bankruptcy for a lot of people conjures all kinds of scary feelings and negative thoughts and just general assumptions that this is the worst possible outcome for a person financially or otherwise. It's something that people will often go to extraordinary lengths to avoid, and it's also a concept that not enough people truly understand. I wanted to speak to someone when we knew we were going out looking for real financial stories who's actually experienced bankruptcy and can speak to it as not just a concept, but also as a financial tool to help demystify, destigmatize, and to help us all understand all options that are available to us. I won't sit here and pretend that filing for bankruptcy is ever a fun thing or a general sign of a healthy financial situation, but it's also not the thing to be feared, perhaps to quite the extent that it is, and can in many cases be a better option than the alternative. But I can't speak to it nearly as well as my guest can, so without further ado, I am so grateful to be welcoming Caitlin Walker to the show today. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, Chelsea. So happy to be here today.
So happy to have you. So could you start by just explaining for the audience who you are and your personal story with bankruptcy?
Yeah. So I am a 35-year-old mother of two. I come from a two-income household. We're both blue-collar workers. I work in manufacturing, and my husband is a sheet metal worker. And I filed bankruptcy when I was in my early 20s in 2010. I graduated in 2007. My family, which was also blue collar, was hit very hard by the recession. We lost our home in 2005, and we were basically renting different homes until I graduated from high school. So there was a lot of financial turmoil and financial peril that led up to my filing bankruptcy. It was a scary decision to make, but ultimately, now almost 15 years outside of that, the best decision I ever made for myself financially.
Can we talk quickly about specifics in terms of where you were financially when you filed for bankruptcy and why that was the best decision for you at the time?
Yeah, absolutely. The catalyst for the bankruptcy was a car accident involving my father's work car that I was borrowing that did not have insurance. The brakes went out on the car. I was involved in an accident that totaled another person's car. And then I was at fault for covering the vehicle replacement because it was totaled. Which was about 15 grand worth of debt that we could not afford to pay, that I was not going to be able to pay. Living at home with my parents at the time, I was working full-time and part-time. I had a full-time job in a factory and was working part-time in a movie theater. And I was also trying to go to school part-time at the same time. And it became more stressful. There were bill people calling me, and I was like, Mom, how are we going to pay for this? Because at the time, all of my paycheck, with the exception of the movie theater, was going to helping pay my family's bills. I would come home with my paycheck and say, here's my money, pay the bills. And so I wasn't necessarily outside of the nest at this point. I'm helping my family financially when I filed bankruptcy. Filing bankruptcy was also the catalyst for no longer being under my parents financially, I cut them off after that. Not emotionally, but cut them off financially. They no longer had any influence on my finances, and I was free to go out in the world like a baby bird.
So maybe not obviously, but for context, there are different types of bankruptcy. Can you speak to the one that you specifically filed and what a bankruptcy actually meant in practice for you financially, legally, et cetera?
So there are two types of bankruptcy: Chapter 13, which is where you have to pay back the debt, and Chapter 7, which is where it is wrote off by the court system. I filed Chapter 7. Encompassed into that bankruptcy was the car accident, so anything that was going to the insurance company, as well as three credit cards, two of which I had no knowledge of prior to meeting with the attorney, that my mother had opened in my name when I was a senior in high school. So when I turned 18, that was something that she kind of was like, here, we're going to add these into the paperwork. And I'm like, what's that, Mom? She's like, oh, those are your credit cards, remember? And mind you, I had never seen them in my life. So instead of filing bankruptcy for $15,000, it ended up being over $20,000 that I was filing bankruptcy for. And when you meet with an attorney to file Chapter 7 bankruptcy, you have to bring all of the paperwork with you that says, here's what I want wrote off. I also had student loans at that time. And student loans, if you don't know, are not included. They're not write-offable. You cannot declare bankruptcy for those. So you will still have to pay them back. So I knew that going in that, one, I wasn't paying student loans because I wasn't paying for these credit cards and I couldn't afford to pay for this person's car. It was a really eye-opening experience, and I was embarrassed to be 21 filing bankruptcy when all of my friends were in college partying, starting their lives, and I felt like I was at the end of my financial life at that point in time. It was a very bleak moment for me.
Well, we're going to get into essentially identity theft aspect of it in a bit, because that's kind of what we're talking about with those credit cards. But to stay on the bankruptcy for a second, for those who may not know at home, I think there can, I think there's two sides. I think there's people who are terrified of bankruptcy. It's very stigmatized. It's very negatively viewed. But I think then For certain people, perhaps, who don't understand the process well, there could be this feeling of, oh, well, if all your debts get written off, well, why doesn't everyone file for bankruptcy? And, for most people, some of the biggest concerns are the huge impact that it has on your credit score. I'm sure many people have, if you've ever filled out something like a loan application, usually a question will be, have you ever filed for bankruptcy? I mean, it's not perhaps at the level of having committed a crime and having to disclose that at every single turn, but there is a similar level of, this is a sort of permanent mark on your record that will kind of follow you around financially in a lot of different ways. Can you speak to A, why that was still the better decision for you in the moment, even knowing all of the impacts that it would have on your finances, but then B, how 15 years later it has come to be the best financial choice, even with some of those lingering impacts?
So the initial financial hits, especially if you're somebody who's got assets, and obviously at the time I didn't have any, which in Chapter 7, what would happen is if you had a vehicle, they could take your vehicle, repossess your vehicle to pay off your debts. If you have property, they can repossess. So I think I came at it from a fairly unique situation because I didn't have anything. I was living with my parents. I didn't have a car that wasn't borrowed. I didn't have any assets for the courts to repossess. So when filing bankruptcy, they're really outside of the recourse on not being able to get a credit card, which at the time I'm like, I don't need a credit card. I haven't been using them. And a credit score that was in the toilet, so to speak. On the flip side, as I was told by the attorney, it can take anywhere from 7 to 10 years for your credit score to recover. And in my early 20s, I'm working full-time and part-time for most of that time. And saving and learning and educating myself, because like I said, after I filed bankruptcy, I cut my family off. By the end of that year, 2010, I had moved out of home. I was living with a friend and paying my bills. I was responsible for myself. I had gotten a car cheap, and I was getting myself to and from work and making sure that I was learning. One of those tools eventually was your guys' channel and just being better educated and how to take care of myself financially. And on the offset, 15 years later, I am a homeowner. The home is in my name. It is not also in my husband's name. It is just in my name because my credit score was better than his. I have investments. We go on vacation. I have cars. My credit score is in the high 700s. And if I had not filed bankruptcy in my 20s, I can see where my life is not where it's at now. I can see where I struggle to pay anything back and struggle to have anything of not necessarily of value, but asset wise in my life, because I cannot get out of the hole that I'm in. And I think a lot of people who don't have accessibility to a family or a safety net, if you will, could find themselves just continuing to dig the hole of debt, as opposed to maybe using bankruptcy as an option to give them a fresh start, especially if they have parents who take advantage of their credit or are put in positions that they didn't put themselves in. I think there's a lot of misinformation, and I think there's a lot of ignorance when it comes to credit cards and finances in general at large, and myself included, not having a financial education class in high school and from there.
So getting back to the identity theft aspect, so you mentioned that your mother had opened multiple credit cards in your name without your knowledge, which you only discovered when she brought them to your bankruptcy attorney and was like, hey, throw this on the pile while she's filing for bankruptcy and getting all these debts written off. I can only imagine, but I assume being 21 and in the throes of an extreme financial crisis, that maybe in the moment, the extent of what that implied didn't really necessarily register. But I'm sure that as time went on, that sort of maybe you, especially as you gained more knowledge about finances in general, you started to maybe understand better the gravity of what had kind of taken place. Can you sort of walk us through the both financial but also emotional, psychological journey of kind of reconciling with that?
When you're in your early 20s and something like that happens, especially from an uneducated standpoint, as I was betrayed financially, and I had been having a hard time at that time with handing over my paycheck every week. It felt like, why am I working two jobs? And why is it my responsibility to make sure that things are getting taken care of? And I had, older people that I worked with that I would vent to because I was struggling with that. So it was very much of, in that moment, the shock of, oh my gosh, what is this? And this is just a further betrayal, but also the empowerment for me of being like, I'm done. You don't get to have access to, don't ever use my social security number. Don't ever, if I look into it, because now at that point, I knew how to look into it because I was educated by the attorney on how to go through and make sure that I was getting all of the debt to file for the bankruptcy. I said, don't ever have act. You don't have access to it. You don't get to give me advice. And it was hard. But at the same time, I was also young and it didn't affect my relationship with my family. I still have a really good relationship with my family, but from a financial aspect and from a financial standpoint, I don't tell them anything. They don't know about my investments. They don't know about when I went to buy a house with my husband. All of that was me seeking other people advice, who had purchased property, who had invested, who they went through. And so it's still something that we don't talk about, which is sad if you're somebody who leans on your parents to be the elder money person in your life. But for me, it was probably the best decision to cut them off, because yes, identity theft is very invasive. And whether my mom did it because of any malicious intent, and I don't think that she did, I just think that it was a really hard time for them financially, and it seemed like an easy way, because I did get one of the three credit cards that went with me to college. And so maybe at some point it was like, well, this is helping pay for Caitlin's stuff at college. This is helping pay for things that she needs. And at the same time was something that they were using on the side. So I can give her a little bit of leeway. Maybe I shouldn't, but she is my mom.
Just from a logistical POV, so obviously there was debt, so the card wasn't being paid off in full every month, but were they paying the minimums, or were they not paying at all and letting it go to collections? Like, what was happening with those cards?
I would assume, because like I said, after we filed bankruptcy, I never talked to her about it. I assume that they were paying the minimum and that's it, because they weren't in collections, but they were maxed out. They were, you know, at the far end of that. So she's just paying the bare minimum on their credit cards. But at that point in time, I was shocked that they were there. And second, it was like, okay, well, you're in luck. They're getting wrote off because of the bankruptcy, because I'm filing bankruptcy and I'm taking the hit to my credit. So yeah, I wish I knew. I wish at the time I had the foresight to ask the question, but I didn't.
Well, I mean, the thing is, even if they are just paying the minimums, they're already negatively affecting your credit score by having, you know, maxed out cards, because obviously, I'm sure our audience knows, but it's always important to reiterate that a big part of your credit score is your credit utilization ratio, or how much you're using versus how much you can use. So having maxed out cards is very bad for that. You know, I would be interested, you know, obviously you've really severed the relationship with your family financially. And I think given everything you've said, that sounds completely reasonable. But as someone who has really educated yourself quite a bit financially since this experience and has really changed your relationship to money, have you tried to kind of have the conversation with family about like, hey, seems like things are not going super well financially at any given time. Like, here are some of the things that have really helped me.
Talking about finances with my parents specifically is just not something that I was ever willing to breach. After they broke my confidence, and this might sound terrible, but I don't necessarily care where they're at financially from a standpoint of debt and whatnot. Saying that out loud and knowing how good of a relationship I have with my parents sounds awful. But I think part of that is just me protecting myself from being opened up to the hurt that I have there. And maybe we should see a counselor. Mom and I should see a counselor about it. But I do try in part my friends, because they do know that I take a lot of pride in my finances and being on top of things. And I've had people come to me and they're in, God, 70 grand, 70, 90 grand worth of debt, credit card debt, vehicle debt. And they're like, well, Caitlin, and I was like, file bankruptcy. And I've been fairly adamant, especially about people who don't have assets. Because I feel like they think, well, we'll just keep pushing it aside. We'll just keep not paying it. And I'm like, well, especially my friends who would go to be getting married, and they're like, well, I don't want my husband to have to worry about this 70 grand worth of credit card debt I've got hanging out here. And that's when I was most vehement about filing bankruptcy and using it as a tool to get out of a horrific a horrific financial standpoint, especially when they were working part time. I'm like, you don't make 30 grand a year. I don't know how you got into 70 grand worth of debt, and it's not my business. But if you truly want a blank slate, you have the opportunity to do this. And I think there's so much fear mongering and scare tactics around bankruptcy that it makes me really upset, because I do view it as the best thing I ever did for myself financially. And which sounds crazy. I'm like, hey, I filed a bankruptcy, and it's the best thing I ever did. But if major corporations can file bankruptcy and they no skin off their back, why can't somebody who's not in a position to bail themselves, who doesn't come from a position to be able to be bailed out, not also use that as a tool to right themselves financially?
I don't think that sounds crazy at all. I also don't think it sounds terrible that you have completely emotionally separated yourself from your parents' finances, because I mean, listen, I'm not an attorney. Let's let the attorneys sound off in the comments, but I feel like common sense would dictate that you probably could have taken your parents to court for having done that without your knowledge. So I think even just, preserving a relationship of any kind, even with the carve out of the financial aspect of it, like I think that's already very generous and more than a person would owe them. And by sparing them, perhaps a lengthy and expensive court process, you've already done them a huge favor.
Yeah. No, I definitely see that. And I come from a small family, so we're pretty tight knit. So to have that, what I would consider betrayal, but fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. And I was very much like, not gonna happen again. So we'll just box this off and set it to the side.
Well, what's interesting to me about your story is that, I mean, car accident aside, it sounds like that was completely unforeseeable and not your fault. And obviously the credit card debt, you weren't even aware that those cards existed. So, and on top of that, at the time, you were financially supporting your family. So sort of on every level, this was, you found yourself in such a catastrophic financial position through kind of no fault of your own, and despite doing the right things and despite helping other people. And you're talking about, having friends, having people in your life who you see, and even, people in your own family who get themselves into really terrible financial positions, kind of voluntarily, through credit card spending, through consumer spending, through, not living below their means, all these different things. How do you kind of, what is your outlook on seeing people put themselves in these positions, having been put in that position against your will?
I think for a lot of younger folks, it is a lack of education. It is a lack of knowledge in how credit cards work, how the system works in that way. I mean, it was an uphill battle for me to learn how to use a credit card when I was finally able to get one after the bankruptcy. So that took a couple of years before I was able to apply for a credit card. And it was like, oh, well, to have credit, you have to build credit, you have to have credit, which is crazy. The system is backwards in that aspect. But at the same time, I don't think it's fair to assume that everybody has the knowledge of the financial systems that I would say I do currently. And I think a lot of times, and specifically from my standpoint, is finances growing up weren't something that we talked about. I knew that we were not, well off. I knew we weren't doing great, but there was not a transparency as far as like, hey, mom, I'm looking at an out-of-state school to go to college. There wasn't a, hey, we can't afford to pay for that. It was a, well, you got scholarships, good job, go ahead and go. We'll pack you up and go. And then getting there and finding out, we can't afford to pay for it. The school's like, you didn't pay your tuition, so we're gonna kick you out. And I was like, what do you mean we didn't pay the tuition? And I think without there being education in place, you can't hold people accountable. And that sounds terrible. I think some people intentionally, they know like, oh, this credit card's free money, but I've heard more often than not that people assume that a credit card is just that, free money. They don't have to pay it back. they're not, there's no recourse for that. And when they find out, you know, 5 years down the line, when they go to apply for something, what do you mean my credit score is bad? I have a credit. They're like, did you pay it off? You were supposed to pay it off. And also all of the systems that I'm now using that I know about how credit cards can enrich your life and benefit your life. You can use, you know, points for flying, you know, zero interest, no APR when you buy a new refrigerator, if you pay it off. And so you don't have to pay the interest on it. And that stuff that is new for me, and I'm in my middle 30s, and I'm like, well, I'm just every day I'm learning, every day I'm growing. And I do think that there needs to be more education for people at large, or as a parent, it's my job to make sure that my kids understand how finances work. Just like it's my job to make sure that they're, you know, good citizens to the general public and treating people, you know, a specific type of way. So
as many of you might know, I have been on a bit of a food spending and food habit journey this year. I spent the whole month of February cooking 100% of my meals at home from scratch. And while I'm definitely now doing a little bit of restaurants and delivery, it is nowhere near the scale I used to be doing it at. And given how much I've been changing my food habits, especially as it pertains to food shopping, it is perfect that right now we are partnering with Hungry Root. Hungry Root makes it super easy to eat healthy. They send you fresh, high-quality groceries and simple recipes to take the guesswork out of your meal planning and prepping. Take a short quiz and Hungry Root will get to know your personal health goals, what you like to eat, and more. Then they'll build you a personalized cart with all your grocery needs for the week and give you delicious recipe recommendations to put those groceries to use. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or, like me, choose other things that you might want. I did a combination of both. They've got fresh produce, high quality meat and seafood, healthy snacks, smoothies, sweets, ready to eat meals, kids snacks, vitamins, supplements, and more. Like I said, I personally did some of their suggested groceries based on meals that they curated, but I also swapped out some of the things for other ingredients that I've been wanting to try. Notably, I got this tandoori masala paneer that I turned into a really nice Indian chop salad the other night, which you can see here. And tonight I'm going to be making drunken noodles with the rice noodles that I got from Hungry Root. That's true. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering the Financial Confessions listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Go to hungryroot.com/TFC to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/TFC. Don't forget to use our link so they know that we sent you. So obviously now, I mean, each year as you get more stable financially, it becomes easier and easier to build on that financial stability and to make better choices. But I would be very interested to hear some of the financial steps that you took in the first few years after bankruptcy, where, to your point, you didn't really have the ability to build credit. You didn't have the ability to make a lot of choices. You weren't having, I assume, a huge amount of income at the time. You were young. So can you talk about what financial management looked like to you immediately after bankruptcy?
Yes. Immediately after bankruptcy, as I stated earlier, within 6 months of filing bankruptcy, I was moved out of my family's home and being responsible for myself financially. I worked full time. So I was, you know, making full time. I think I was making $10, maybe $11 an hour at the warehouse that I worked at. But I also worked part time someplace else. And that money was strictly for bills and gas to get me, and then food. And I didn't really think about anything else if it wasn't in my budget or if I didn't have the money that I couldn't do it. And then a couple of years later, I got my first letter from a credit card company that said, hey, apply for a credit card. And I was like, holy crap, I can apply for a credit card. I'm finally like, they told me this would happen. And my first credit card after filing bankruptcy was, I want to say 2 years later. And it was a $300 credit limit. And I was like, okay, $300 credit limit is my gas credit card. And I only used it to pay gas, and I'd pay it off. Pay for gas, pay it off. And so through that building, you know, the credit card go, hey, we're going to raise your limit. We're going to raise your limit. And then I wasn't able to buy a car until I was about 6 years outside of bankruptcy. Of course, I didn't try before then because I was still utilizing the vehicle that I had had to get me to and from before then. And buying a car was something else, because it's like, holy crap, I'm not 7 years out from my bankruptcy, and here I am at the car dealership buying my first car. And, you know, my little credit card, and I think my credit score was in the low 600s. And I was like, oh, we're coming up in the world. And it becomes one of those things where you're very right. As your finances start to right themselves, and when you've been in such a catastrophic place where you're like, things aren't being paid, I have nothing de facto now, you take a lot of pride in paying things on time or paying things before they're due and staying on top of it. It becomes, for me, it became a, I paid my bills, I have my little checklist, paid. Okay, this is my extra. Ooh, what am I gonna do with this extra money? And that became the catalyst for improving myself at work, getting promotions, changing jobs, seeking more. And I think, like I said before, had I not filed bankruptcy and had I been in a place where it felt unsurmountable, you feel like you're in the bottom of a hole. You're like, I'm never getting out of this. So what's the point of trying? To be on flat ground, even with nothing, you're like, okay, well, let's start the ball rolling. And to be 15 years later, where I'm at now financially, it's like, I never thought I'd be the person that says I have investment accounts for my kids. I never thought I'd have, like, every month money's going away. I'm saving for my retirement, even if my job doesn't provide that.
Well, first of all, you should be extremely proud of yourself, because that is truly amazing. And as someone who did not file for bankruptcy, but started their financial journey with rock bottom credit score in collections, got arrested, like went through the whole rigmarole of like how bad things can get financially and how hard it can be to see a future. I think like that's it. It totally resonates that taking control over your finances, even if you have so little to work with, like the reinforcement of I set out to do something and I did it. I can rely on myself. I can be accountable to myself, even in extremely small increments. Like, it resonates through every aspect of your life. It gives you such a sense of agency. It makes you feel so much more capable. I think for a lot of people, the same is true of things like fitness, you know, just I think it cannot ever be under or overstated, rather, how powerful it is to see yourself achieve goals, no matter how small they are. And I think that is, you're so right that if the bankruptcy is what allowed you to start doing that, as opposed to feeling like you were perpetually at the bottom of a hole that there's no point in even trying, I think you're totally right that even on a psychological level, it has humongous benefits. Just out of curiosity, how were you able to get your own, like, sign on your own place moving out of your parents' house just after filing bankruptcy?
So I technically did not sign on my own place. I lived with somebody I worked with who was 7 years my senior. She was older than me. And we rented a house from another friend who was like renting out the house. We lived there for 6 months before she sold the house. And then we signed for another place. But because it was my first time, I never defaulted on rent outside of, you know, that's my only history. It was my first time living outside of the home. So when I went to the apartment place, I was with somebody who had rented multiple places. And then I was the roommate. So I think that played a role in it for sure.
Oh, totally. It is just always interesting seeing the way, because I similarly, when I was at my worst place financially, I rented a room in a house with some friends. It was a very new girl type scenario. It was three male engineers and me. And they were always playing pranks on me that were very upsetting. And I don't think looking back would be considered pranks. What a digression. Anyway, they were not, they didn't do anything crazy. It was just like, it was a lot of gross out stuff is all I can say. But anyway, point being, and you know, what's funny too, is I don't know if you feel the same way, but like, you know, as you move through financial security and building, like now, I mean, I love the home that I live in. I feel very proud of it. I enjoy taking care of it and decorating it and all of that. But there is something just so magical feeling about when you're in a really difficult place financially and you get a space of your own and you feel like it might be the this thing in the world, but it's mine and I'm able to pay for it. And I just remember, like, I just loved the way that felt. And I felt so proud of myself.
Yeah, that first little bedroom that was mine outside of, and when I removed myself from my family's home, was like, holy crap, I got boys over? Whoa, this is crazy. Oh, I can make my own meal? I'm like, oh, I can be fancy. I can, you know, it was one of those like, oh, there's so many possibilities. We can watch whatever we want on TV. And it was just a little spare bedroom and a house. And then it was a little spare bedroom and a townhouse. But it was so, I was so proud of that space. And I was so grateful for my friend, who knew that I financially could afford to pay for it because I did work full time and part time. She knew that there was money coming in. And if I'm 100% honest, there aren't very many people who know that I have filed bankruptcy. For a lot of my life, it was not talking about it because it is looked down upon. I remember when I told my now husband, he was like, no way. This chick who's got a new car, who lives in her own place, because eventually I lived by myself in a little two bedroom duplex. He's like, you filed bankruptcy? And I was like, yeah, it was 10 years ago now, but yeah, I did. And you know, he's like, your credit score is better than my credit score. And I was like, I don't want to, you know, toot my own horn. But yeah, very, very proud moments of like that first car, that first apartment, the first time you take yourself out for a meal that you pay for. That's like, yeah, I did this.
So we've been doing, we've had some interviews and a video essay recently about people not having children and all the different reasons for that. I mean, I'm someone who personally doesn't want to, but one thing that we hear about and that we talk about and quite a bit on the channel and want to kind of give a voice to is all of the people who would like to have children but don't feel financially in a position to do so, which is way more common now, I think, than it's ever really been. And especially given how insanely expensive childcare has become and how difficult it can be for a lot of people to manage both, you know, a career and having children or being obligated to work because it's, you know, impossible to survive on one income or whatever the iteration is. There's many different iterations, but for many people, there's a sense of, I don't think I'll ever feel ready to have children financially. And I think that's always exacerbated, especially when you come from a family that not only can you not rely on them financially, you might be responsible for them financially. You know, there's such an unspoken difference. I mean, I think anyone in our generation feels it who is on one side of that line of like, it's so unrelatable to feel like your family is a source of financial relief or help when your family is a source of financial stress. And I think that's a huge dividing line that even between two adults who earn the same amount of money, that amount of money can mean vastly different things, especially when you consider bringing children into the picture. So as someone who came from a difficult financial background, who has a strenuous financial relationship with family, who filed bankruptcy, who was, you know, very low income, how did you get to a place where you felt, okay, now I'm ready to have children and I feel secure in that financially?
I might not be the best person to talk on this because my all I ever wanted to be was a mom. I never didn't want to be one. I knew before I met my now husband, father of my kids. I had even told my mom, if I don't meet somebody by the time I'm 30, I'll just go get pregnant. Like I'll go to a donor place and have a kid by myself. Because in my mind, It was such a bone deep desire to be a mom. Sorry, I'm trying not to get emotional.
Get emotional.
That financially speaking, even coming from a rough background or struggling, I think people who struggle, especially if they really want to be a parent, where there's a will, there's a way. I always worked a full-time job and a part-time job, or a full-time job and a side hustle. I work a full-time job now. My husband works a full-time job, and I have a side hustle that I do that I started when my daughter was, my second born was itty bitty. And it was just like, okay, if I financially can't afford to pay for this, what can I do? And I'm the type of person who drives past like a fast food place that says now hiring $15 an hour. I'm like, dang, $15 an hour? Pick up a couple shifts, and my husband has to talk me off the ledge saying, Caitlin, no, you don't need another job. We don't need another. And I was like, well, I mean, if we'd ever did, I'm gonna get myself another job. And that's kind of, I think it, if you're on the fence about having children, but, and it, the fence is, will I ever be able to financially afford this? The answer to that question is, unless you come from a lot and it's never been a struggle, kids are hard and finances are always going to be difficult, especially when it comes to finding affordable and safe childcare. But if you want to be a parent, and if you and your partner, that's your desire to, is to have a family, you can make it happen. You will find a way to make it happen, whether that is seeking out a job that pays you better, or like I said, starting a side hustle, or and not an MLM, because we don't do that. but you know, getting a part-time job, or picking up a coffee, like becoming the barista that works on Saturday and Sunday mornings, the butt crack of dawn shift when the kids are sleeping and the husband's at home to take care of them. I just think that where there's a will, there's a way. Now, they might not have the fancy schmancy, they might not be able to go to all like the good stuff, but what they will have is parents who love them, who want them. And you know, I always say, we might not have much, but I can cook, and we got good food, and we got a roof over our head, and the bills are paid. So it might not be fancy, but there is a lot of good there. There's a lot of good in the safety and just the joys of being with each other.
Amen. You know, it's always so funny to me. It's a fine balance, right? Because I never want to be dismissive of something that I can't relate to, right? Like as someone who is not a parent, although I do have other financial responsibilities in my life, that is one specific type of financial responsibility I can't understand or relate to. However, sometimes, and I think I also don't want to diminish how real of a struggle it is for a lot of people financially. And especially, again, as I mentioned, you know, kind of that sandwich generation for people who are burdened from above and below financially and who don't have enough resources for themselves. However, it is an interesting perspective, having grown up low income and known, I mean, my mom was 27 when she had me. They had no money. I don't think I ever once got a new thing, really. All my clothes were, my mother made them, or they were secondhand. We didn't go on vacations, really. Every meal was home cooked. Like, it was too expensive to go even to like a fast food restaurant or a Fridays. Like, we had, and I feel in many ways that I had a wonderful childhood and a delightful childhood. And I have great memories of all those things. And I think part of the struggle, I think, and this I think resonates in so many different aspects of life, is the expectations have increased, I think, in some ways, because I'll hear, you know, I look around at children around me and they're going on multiple vacations a year, and they're, you know, joining their parents out at nice restaurants, and they're getting all new toys at Christmas, and they're wearing nice clothes. And I think part of that is just different socioeconomic classes. But I also think because we live in a world where so much more consumerism is pushed on us and we can see the way other people are living, I feel like the expectations of what life needs to look like and what luxuries you need are so different. And I often wonder if my childhood would have felt differently to me if at the time I had access to things like social media and could see the way that other kids were living, you know?
Yeah, and my husband and I talk about that a lot. He's from Eastern Kentucky, Appalachia. So if we were lower middle class, they were lower class.
Yeah.
And had less. And we talk about it a lot from the sense of like, well, we didn't have much, but now we're adults, and it's like we don't want for anything. But we're also the type of people who, because we have the financial history that we have, that we don't just buy stuff willy-nilly. Like, I'm a review reader. I'm a deep diver on Amazon. Is this exactly, will it be weight limited and all of those things? I'm just a different type of consumer. And the thing about being a parent and raising children, especially, you know, nowadays with social media and stuff like that, is I get to make the decisions on what comes into my kids' life. So how holidays are celebrated, how we, you know, are, you know, in the world. And because there were Christmases that we didn't get anything, and I would go back to school and people were like, oh, I got this, this, and this. And I would be like, I got the Lord of the Rings DVD, and it was awesome. I'm really glad I got it. And that was all I got. And I'm like, we don't celebrate Christmas like everybody celebrates Christmas. Now, might be because one of my kids' birthdays is Christmas Eve, but I think you have to make decisions. And you can, I'm not a rule follower, so to speak. I dance to the beat of my own drum, if you will. And that goes with not going with the general masses. I have things that I believe in, things that, you know, my husband and I agree on, when it comes to raising the kids. And I think as an adult, you get to make that call. And I think a lot of people get lost in social media at large being, well, Sally Sue got the brand new Stanley cup, and I'm over here like, it's my reduced cup. I paid $17 for it. and it becomes one of those things where I'm like, all right, I got a deal. And I love the discourse that you guys have on your channel when it comes to fast fashion. That's affected me as a plus size person, being like, man, I got to really look into how I buy things. And I think the media that you consume affects how you affect the people at large. And I like to think that I'm conscious of what's coming in, so that I can be like, oh, don't want to do that. Don't want to be the person that's perpetuating that. So...
Well, thank you again. As a last kind of question, what would be your number one piece of advice for someone who feels like they're really struggling and drowning financially and can't see a future?
I would say if bankruptcy is something that they're considering, and especially if they're somebody without assets, i.e. a vehicle that they need to get from point A to point B, or a property, a home that they live in, it would be a really good idea to look into it. Even if you just talk to an attorney, it doesn't hurt to ask the questions, because like, it can be a tool that you should use if you feel like you are at the bottom of the barrel and it's not getting any better. And if you're somebody who doesn't think it'll ever get better, it gets better. It gets easier the more you pay attention to becoming well-versed in your finances, the more you pay attention to budgeting. And I don't think that you can budget your way out of a serious amount of debt. But I do think if you're somebody that struggles with the day-to-day, how can I afford this? And you haven't taken a chance to learn how to do basic budgeting, or sit down and just write out where the money's going. I think a lot of people lose sight on all the things that they're paying, and that would be a really good tool. But things get better and things get easier. And like I said, I'm like, where there's a will, there's a way. If there's a bill that needs paid and I can work, thankfully I'm able-bodied and can get myself to and from work, I would have a job. But if you're somebody that's struggling with that, make sure that you're using your resources in the state that you live in, as specific resources for yourself in your community, depending on how you're affected, because I know that there are people who could benefit gratefully from using those resources that don't, because of a point of pride. And there's no shame in using what's available to you, whether that be unemployment, welfare, Social Security. Especially if you qualify for it, I think that people should utilize them. They're there for a reason. I want my tax money going to the people who need it.
Get, hell yes, get your money's worth. Get my money's worth. Get everyone's money's worth. Food banks too.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
thrift shops, everything available to you. Use it. Caitlin, this has been such a delightful conversation. I think it's so important. And you're just the perfect person to talk about it. Thank you so, so much for joining us. I mean, if there's anything you'd like to send our audience to or promote, please feel free.
No, I'm just a mom. I'm on social media. I do book reviews because I'm an avid 300 plus book a year reader. So that's my hobby.
That is so impressive. Wait, I'm going to go follow your book account. I love that. That is an insane amount of books to read per year.
There's not a lot of things you can do when you have small children, but read and clean the house.
I hear you. Thank you again for joining us, Caitlin. And thank you all for tuning in at home. We will see you back here next Monday on a new episode of The Financial Confessions. Bye. Thank you so much for joining us, and be sure to tune in next week for an all-new episode of The Financial Confessions. The Financial Confessions is created by The Financial Diet and hosted by me, Chelsea Fagan. It is produced by Alexa Brooks Major and Holly Trantham. Recording and editing by Emily Fisher, and music and sound effects are from Epidemic Sound. Want more of our content? Head over to our YouTube page, The Financial Diet, to see our monthly deep dives, videos of this show, and our entire backlog of videos and podcasts. I'll talk to you next week.